Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Trump administration last week put the final touches on a rule change that makes it more difficult for able-bodied adults without children to get food stamps. The plan, which tightens work requirements for the federal food aid, could render as many as 700,000 people ineligible for the program, including 45,000 Ohioans. Columbus Dispatch reporter Randy Ludlow has been following the story. Welcome back, Randy.
Good morning, Ann.
So tell us, what are the changes that they're not being proposed? They're going to go into effect on April 1st, right?
Right. These were enacted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture at the urging of President Donald Trump. Effectively, it tells able-bodied adults without children or without dependents between the ages of 18 and 49 that they now must meet work requirements that consist of at least 80 hours a month of work, job training, or community service. And current law restricts able-bodied adults to 3 months food stamps in a three-year period. But under waivers that the federal government had allowed, nearly half of Ohio's counties that were considered to have higher than usual unemployment were allowed to grant these waivers to permit people to receive long-term benefits without meeting those work requirements. Under the federal changes, those waivers can only now be granted in counties with unemployment of 6% or more, and in Ohio, that only covers three counties. So this is going to be quite a change and potentially affect up to 45,000 people who are now not working, who will have to go to work or get job training.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the change to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, or what's commonly called food stamps, and the impact it'll have on Ohio. My guest is Columbus Dispatch reporter Randy Ludlow. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Which three counties are spared these cuts?
Well, these are located in rural eastern and southeast Ohio, notably Monroe, Noble, and Jefferson counties. The counties that were exempt from work requirements, at least SNAP recipients, like as noted, that's nearly half of Ohio, including some of the biggest counties in Cuyahoga, Mahoney, Stark, and Summit. Franklin and Hamilton counties were not among the counties with waivers.
How did Ohio officials respond to the announcement?
They're really not offering many comment at this point, nor do they offer any comment during the comment period conducted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So they've largely been silent on this. Advocates for the poor say this will exacerbate food insecurity in Ohio. Sherrod Brown, U.S. Senator, blasted it, saying it's very insensitive to low-income Ohioans. But then again, the federal advocates say these have become a way of life for too many people with the ability to work, and they need to be prodded to get a job or at least get job training.
Yeah, I read that you wrote that it'll encourage recipients to seek work, and I wondered if they provided any evidence for whether that would be the case, that more people would get jobs now that these benefits have been cut.
Well, they do point out that in the majority of Ohio counties, these work requirements already exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we should note that these benefits average about $126 a month. So when you consider 126 months of food assistance over a month's time, that's not a lot of money, but cumulatively it does cost Ohio $168 million a month for the entire food and SNAP or food stamp program. Advocates are also worried about other pending federal rules that would have a much larger sweeping changes, a proposed change in household utility expenses are calculated on determining food stamp eligibility.
What would that do?
Well, this could, at least according to the Center for Community Solutions, result in reduced benefits 41% of the 660,000 households receiving SNAP benefits. That would cut their monthly benefits $45 or 36%.
Why are they, do we know why they're doing it? Is it just to cut money, cut spending?
Well, that's one of the purported reasons behind the change. The rule change for able-bodied adults will save an estimated $5 billion over the next 5 years. These other rules are being fought very stringently. We'll have to see what happens. Congress could still act here. In the Farm Bill last year, federal lawmakers rejected this change as part of the Farm Bill.
Uh-huh.
So Congress could potentially act on this if they're so moved.
And then it would require a signature from the president, right?
Right. He could potentially veto such a measure.
So Ohio officials haven't responded yet. What do they have to work on right at this point to decide who will be affected? Is it up to the states to decide, or how will that work? When will we know, and when will recipients know if they're cut?
The federal law is pretty clear. You cannot grant waivers for able-bodied adults without children unless they live in a county where unemployment exceeds 6%, and that is just the three Ohio counties we identified earlier.
Is there any sense that the state will step in to fill the gap, or at least some of it?
I would think that doubtful, given the Republican-controlled General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, there had been a bill pending for the Ohio House to prevent waivers of work requirements, and that was backed by 23 Republicans, so that's quite a number. So I mm-hmm. don't look for them to certainly seek to change or fill in the funding gap to allow these waivers to continue for able-bodied adults.
Would it require a vote of the General Assembly, or could the governor take an executive approach to it?
Well, you would have to have funding to do this.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and, of course, the legislature is the one that appropriates state money, so that would be, I think, a difficult task.
And the Republican bill that would disallow work requirement waivers, the one that's pending in the House committee, what are the prospects for that going forward? Because that could even wipe out the three counties that are preserved, for which the waivers are preserved at this point, right?
Well, those are three small counties, so we're really not talking a lot of people. So, and if this federal rule is in effect, I don't see where they really need to worry about any state legislation.
What counties will be the most affected? Where are the is it the big counties like Cuyahoga, Franklin, that kind of a thing, or
well,
what?
The counties, the biggest counties with now the waiver that allows people to see long-term food stamps are Cuyahoga, Mahoning, Stark, Summit. So we're talking Cleveland, Youngstown, Canton,
okay.
Akron. Franklin and Hamilton counties, Columbus and Cincinnati, are not among those with waivers. So people here do have to meet work requirements.
What is meant by able body? Do you know? I mean, why?
Well, it means.
Yeah, go ahead.
It means they have no physical or mental disability that precludes them from working.
But there are other reasons that precludes people from working or being able to find a job. Maybe they're a former felon.
Well, right. I mean, particularly in rural Ohio, you're looking at transportation obstacles, without mass transit. Can they get to a workplace?
Right.
Factors such as this.
Well, and not only that, I mean, job training or even to do community service, right?
Right, of essentially averaging 20 hours a week.
So the state's not really saying much about this. That's been my experience as well. Are counties talking about it, county jobs and family services?
I've not seen any statement of job and family services directors on this, but most of them are pretty sympathetic to the people they serve, so I would imagine they're not too happy this and very worried about the pending rules that would have even a larger effect
right,
on SNAP recipients.
And is if they are, if people are able-bodied, we're talking about people who have other things besides physical or mental disabilities holding them back. Like you said, transportation, access to job training, access to community service, that kind of a thing, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, Randy Ludlow, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ann.
That's Randy Ludlow. He's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. He has been covering the decision by the Trump administration to alter and tighten work requirements for the federal food aid program. We think of commonly as food stamps. It could affect 45,000 Ohioans, most of whom come from big counties, as he just described. If you have a question or comment going forward, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
StoryCorps shares unscripted conversations between two people about important things in life: love, loss, family, friendship. StoryCorps partnered with WOSU Public Media to record and share the stories of our city. Recorded here, StoryCorps Columbus preserves pieces of our shared history for future generations. Subscribe to the StoryCorps Columbus podcast now at wosu.org/StoryCorps, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the changes to the food stamps program set to take effect in April 2020. The plan, which tightens work requirements for the federal food aid, could render as many as 700,000 people ineligible for the program, including 45,000 Ohioans. Lisa Hamler-Fugit is the executive director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann.
Ellen Bollinger is the legal director and director of advocacy for the food stamps program at the Food Research and Action Center. That's a national nonprofit dedicated to ending poverty-related hunger. Welcome to the show, Ellen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ellen, what's the national picture of this change? Are some states more vulnerable than others? What's going on? What does it look like?
Well, it's a mixed picture at any given point in time because, of course, some states take better policies that have been made available to them by the federal government. Some states don't do as good a job. And also because the economic picture varies among states. One thing we know about this rule, if it goes in effect, over time, it will probably affect every state negatively, not just the ones that it hits hard in the short run. Certainly Ohio's among those. But states all have economic struggles at different times, often for different reasons. Sometimes they're part of a national trend, but sometimes certain sectors get hit. And this particular flexibility in the law to be able to protect people who reside in areas without insufficient jobs has been one that's been used widely by states. Most states have taken some form of a waiver to protect people in areas with either very high unemployment or just other indicators of insufficiency of jobs, and that's been true well over 20 years. So there are states that are going to be hit harder than others right now, but it's short-sighted to think that this is a good thing for any state over time.
What do we know about the ripple effect, Ellen? Economically, what we're talking about, saving $5 billion at the federal level over the course of a decade. But what does that mean? Is there a calculator there for the economy in the states?
Well, there is. SNAP, or formerly food stamps, has been studied for a long time by economists. And one of the things that they have agreed on over the decades is that it has a very strong what's called multiplier effect. Well, why is that? It's because people who get SNAP, who get those SNAP food benefits, are very needy. They go and spend them. Where do they spend them? They spend them at the local retailers. And that impacts all along the food economy, all along that food chain, from the farmers who are producing food to the manufacturers to the retailers themselves, those grocers, and the people they're employing in the stores, the truckers who are moving the food around. It also, of course, frees up some more room in a household budget to be able to use the SNAP for food and perhaps be able to afford some other basics. And that, again, adds to that economic effect. The best evidence that we have based on a report that reviewed all of these studies this summer is that it's probably somewhere between $1.50 and $1.80 for every $1 in SNAP benefits. That's the ripple effect in the economy. So it's very real, and it's very negative when that kind of support is cut back. And it'll be difficult on stores in some areas that already are operating at thin margins.
Right. Lisa Hamler-Fugit, that are already maybe the only dollar store or the only grocery store in the area for people, they're going to be hurt too.
Yeah, and I just want to say that, you know, it's not just this population. And while this population, horrible acronym, ABOD, unemployed or underemployed able-bodied adults without dependents, is a complete misnomer. As Alan said, for some 20 years, this rule has been in existence. In fact, it has an Ohio origin. It came from then-Congressman Bob Ney and Congressman John Kasich that inserted this into the federal 1996 welfare reform legislation, but a mechanism to allow states to apply for waivers in areas of high unemployment or labor surplus. What this is going to do is not just affect the populations that may lose their SNAP benefits, but also may result in growing food deserts, where grocery stores, especially full-service grocery stores, cannot afford to stay in these communities. Then it becomes a quality of life issue for everyone. And certainly, we've seen growing food deserts
and costing jobs.
Absolutely, jobs across the board. The other thing is, in an economic downturn, could be regional base, a mass layoff, a plant closure such as Lordstown. The state would not be able to respond with this provision.
There's no mechanism for the state to fill the gap of this, Lisa, in Ohio?
Absolutely not. And I think that's the thing that is most disturbing for us as Ohio's largest charitable response to hunger, is this assumption that somehow food banks can fill the gap when we lose critical SNAP benefits. Currently in the state of Ohio today, SNAP provides 12 meals to every one meal that we provide through the Emergency Food Assistance Network. We're absolutely tapped out at this point. And the thought that some 45,000 more Ohioans, and again, this is just the first wave of rules, and this is
right.
really important.
I want to talk about those other ones too,
Really important for folks to understand also who this population is. Let me tell you who this population is. They have undiagnosed mental or physical disabilities that have not been documented by a medical provider. They're homeless. They're veterans who are returning home to their communities after multiple deployments. They're kids aging out of the foster care system. They're adults who have left the workforce to care for disabled relatives or aging parents. They're folks with low literacy. We also believe that there's a high level of autism in this population as well.
And also people who have been convicted of crimes and have served their time, but are because of that are marginalized by the employment system.
Yes. In our study, we found that of this population in Franklin County, 1 in 3 have former experiences with the criminal justice system, including both felony and misdemeanor convictions, making it very difficult to get employment. The other thing that's really not been part of this conversation is that these individuals are out there looking for work. Those who can work do work, but this is a market issue. Employers hire who they want to hire. And in a growing gig economy, low-wage, part-time, temporary employment, these individuals, when they do work, it tends to be part-time. They tend to work less than 79 days consecutively, meaning they're never eligible for unemployment.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the decision by the Trump administration to make it more difficult for able-bodied adults without children to get food stamps. The plan would remove as many as 45,000 Ohio residents from those roles. And by the way, as Lisa Hamler-Fugit of the Ohio Association of Food Banks made the point, there's two other rule changes coming up as well, and we're going to talk about those. Also with us is Ellen Vollinger. She's a legal director and director of advocacy for the food stamps program at the Food Research and Action Center. If you have a question or comment about this rule change and about the upcoming rule changes, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ellen Vollinger, we know, you know, there has been nary a peep out of the DeWine administration here in Ohio. They say they're still calculating the details. In fact, referred me to Lisa Hamler-Fugit if I had any questions about this. What are other states? How are other states responding across the country, Ellen?
Well, some states were very active during the comment period at pushing back because, you know, the rule is a harsh rule and there are a lot of reasons to be opposed to this rule change. But states also recognize it's a cost shift. It doesn't mean that these people who are in need all of a sudden no longer are going to be in need, no longer going to be hungry. But it's shifting the burden from the national commitment that should be there in terms of fighting hunger, shifting it to states, to localities, so to your counties, but also to charities, as Lisa talked about, who can, you know, who are doing what they can now but can't possibly make this up. And, of course, shifting it to the low-income people themselves. So not every state submitted a comment, but a lot of them did, including one joint comment signed by 21 state attorneys general, very opposed to this. And I can tell you that yesterday in the supervisors of Los Angeles County, there was a resolution passed empowering their legal counsel to look into ways that they could take action to fight back, including investigating the possibility of litigation. So I do think that there is a growing awareness among state and local elected officials that this is purely a cost shift, not something that's going to help their constituents, and that there got to be some ways to continue to work to stop it from being implemented.
Why is it, Lisa Hamler-Fugit, that the state needs to crunch some numbers still? It's pretty clear there's three counties that are affected by this, and it seems to be pretty black and white at this point whether they get the waiver or not. And who's affected by that?
I did have an email exchange late yesterday. The state is continuing to try to pull these numbers. This is a very fluid population. I just want to say that, is that again, when folks do work, they generally work less than 80 days consecutively. People move in and out. It's a lot of seasonal work. The state is challenged with a new IT platform and system, as you're probably familiar. They're struggling really to pull data even on the Medicaid population. But we think that there's a lot of crossover in this population where these were new enrollees when we expanded the Medicaid program. Do want to say a couple things. With this new rule, there is no additional resources that come to the states. It's an unfunded mandate. And we know how states and counties feel about unfunded mandates. In order to establish programs, it's going to be up to county commissioners to come up with the money. Also, legal challenge or legal action. Congresswoman Fudge is also leading an effort. Some 100 House Democrats have introduced legislation as of last Friday called the Protect SNAP Act, which they're attempting to intervene on this legislative initiative as well. Whether that will happen or not is unknown at this point. But just one final thing, that, you know, these provisions were rejected outright in a wide bipartisan way. Not much is bipartisan anymore in our country. But in the 2018 Farm Bill, both Republicans and Democrats came together to say no to these provisions. And once again, the Trump administration is circumventing the will of Congress.
All right. So what about, I mean, even, but in Ohio, there's a bill pending in the House, which probably won't move around much because it doesn't have to, but it's a strongly Republican supported measure that would have eliminated these waivers across the state.
Yes. House Bill 200 was introduced earlier this year. It has not moved. We had advocates come out in opposition to the bill. I think we've made strong arguments. This bill is a copy, paste, and legislate bill. that was handed to members of the Ohio House of Representatives by an ultra-conservative group.
Is this the American Legislative Exchange?
It's a form of that, Foundation for Government Accountability Opportunity Solutions Project. These bills are popping all over in other general assemblies. And again, Ohio is a targeted state. You know, Ohioans are proud. We know what's best for Ohioans. Not sure why these carpetbaggers are in Ohio trying to undermine the first line of defense against hunger, and that's the SNAP program.
And Ellen Vollinger, in Ohio, the average value of the benefits from the program was about $127 a month per person. Is that sort of the way it is across the country? And can you explain? I mean, I know you've talked about, you know, the multiplier effect. And that equation that figures what it costs the economy when money's taken out of it in this way, but $127 a month, what does that mean?
It's a very inadequate amount of money for people. It's a lifeline, because if people need some help, and this may be all they get, in particular the population that we're talking about for this first rule has access to very little else in the way of benefits. And as Lisa explained, they may be working, but they're unable to document that they are working on a consistent basis enough to get 80 hours a month. So it's not even just whether the person is willing to work and whether the person has a job. It's whether or not they have the hours that would be required for this. The reason I mention how inadequate the benefit is, we hear talk about billions and billions and billions, and SNAP is a very large program because it's serving so many people. And it does have a multiplier effect. This rule would cost would take $4.5 billion out of the economy over 5 years. So it's an even bigger hit over a 10-year period. But when you look at it on an individual level, people are not going after this benefit because it's the way that they hope to live their life. They're doing it because they're so very needy. Benefits only average about $4 a person a day. That is not a generous benefit. And if anything, if there's a gap or a problem with SNAP that policymakers ought to be focused on, it's improving the amount of benefits that SNAP households get so that, in fact, they can afford a consistent, decent diet throughout the month. You know, one of the reasons that the food banks that Lisa works with have so many people coming to them is sometimes people don't qualify for SNAP. They might be just over the income guidelines. But a lot of them are getting SNAP, and it's not an adequate benefit. We need to do a much better job about setting it at a reasonable diet guideline. We don't have that now.
And Lisa Hamler, if you get, what kind of shift, you talked about this is shifting the burden, but in the state, in the case of Ohio, the states isn't going to do anything. The counties may respond in some way, but all things being equal, what are you seeing is going to be the impact on an organization like yours?
We'll distribute the food until it's gone. And again,
are you expecting, can you estimate what the increased, is it going to increase by 10 or 20%? Or is there any way of knowing that?
We will be monitoring it very closely. We will look certainly.
They're already coming to you ostensibly, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And this idea is that somehow the magic fundraising is going to happen. It just isn't. We can't replace the first line of defense against hunger. We are a supplemental and emergency food provider. We are dealing with changing in demographics. We're seeing more seniors than we've ever seen before. And once they hit the food line, they're the canary in the coal mine. They're not leaving. We don't see industry, by and large. We're seeing consolidation within the food industry. So we're
more
not
efficiencies
see,
and that
absolutely.
Kind of a thing.
Right now, because of the trade mitigation and the trade tariffs, we're receiving some government commodities. But we cannot replace the SNAP program. We will certainly be going to members of the Ohio General Assembly talking about the impact. And I suspect that they're going to know the impact pretty quickly, too, when they're constituents who, through no fault of their own, cannot feed themselves as a result of this rule.
And Ellen Vollinger, we know that it says that they're able-bodied people without children, but that what do we really know about that demographic, and what, how do they really fit into society?
Well, we know that as Lisa said, they can come in many different forms. They may have barriers that have to do with literacy. They may have barriers to do with past involvement with the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. But we know that, number one, they're being taken out of SNAP and off SNAP eligibility, not because of a decision about whether they want to work or not, simply if it's the status of not being able to work a sufficient number of hours a month. So the realities that Lisa talked about in terms of the low-wage labor market, the uneven schedules, the unpredictable schedules, you know, they may be close to doing the number of hours they need, but they have to document them on a more consistent basis. That's going to be a big struggle. I think probably the thing that is least understood about this population by the American public is that this is not a test of whether or not somebody is willing to work, seeking a job, whether they're taking a job or turning one down. It's simply, no matter how much they're searching or want to or maybe working part-time, if they don't have the requisite number of hours, they're going to be cut off. And I don't think the public understands that at all.
And Lisa, is it clear that children will not be affected by this if they're targeting this demographic, you know, with no children, no dependents? Is it clear then that children won't be affected by this?
No. And that, again, is a complete misnomer. 1 in 4 of the population that we work with in this group in Franklin County have children that aren't in their custody, but they're very much involved in their children's lives. So they may be purchasing food that then they're feeding their children when they are taking care of their children. So here again, there's nothing in the law, there's nothing in these provisions that would allow us to provide some data about who this population is. And again, we do know 1 in 4 in Franklin County have children that aren't in their custody. Others are older adults whose children, they've raised their children, may not have been attached to the workforce. So again, you've been out of the workforce for 20 years because you've raised your children. Now you find yourself in a situation where you can't feed yourself and an employer's not interested in hiring you.
Susan in Omaha, Nebraska, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi. Great show. I have a couple points to make, but one quick question. How would this affect Jim Jordan's district? But my comment is, we live in such an odd society where the poor have too much, so we have to take stuff away, but the rich don't have enough, so we've got to give them more. And my example is the tax cut, where they just gave this huge tax cut to these big corporations, guessing that they're going to increase wages, and there's no accountability for that. They haven't increased wages, but they still have the tax cut. Whereas these poor people who are desperately trying to find work but may have a lack of transportation and, you know, they can't decide what the employers are going to do. They're just taken away, and they've got to check with them every few months to make sure they're still eligible, and yet this huge tax cut went through. And
Let me ask you, Susan, what are they saying in Nebraska about this?
You know, Nebraska is a stingy state. A couple years ago, we voted to introduce Medicaid, you know, the expanded Medicaid, mm-hmm. and they're still fighting over how to implement it. Mm-hmm. So Nebraska is a very stingy state. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are a lot of people who aren't happy about it because we voted to, you know, expand the Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So, so they'll probably like this notion, too. But one thing about Nebraska is it's low unemployment. But still, again, the mindset of this is just so backwards. And, how is this going to affect Jim Jordan's district?
I don't know.
Why do they keep voting these people in? So, okay.
Oh, thanks,
well,
Susan.
Unfortunately, Jim Jordan's district is not eligible for a waiver and never has. I can tell you, having been over visiting the West Ohio Food Bank, they're really struggling as well, and they serve Allen County and the surrounding contiguous counties. The one thing about rural areas is while the official unemployment rate may be very low, unemployment only counts and reports those who are actively seeking employment. So what we find in areas that there may be 10 job seekers to every one job available. I just did a quick analysis on Perry County, about an hour outside of Columbus, no public transportation to speak of. There are 600 unemployed, officially unemployed individuals, and I only located 58 jobs, basically in the service sector or temporary type employment that was available. So here again, I would argue that there are not sufficient jobs, and then we do have a significant skills gap. And I hear this all the time from elected leaders. Well, I have employers coming to me and telling me they have all of these jobs that they can't fill for various reasons. Well, there's a huge skills gap. And when we look at jobs, especially in computer technology, there is a large segment of Ohio's workforce that worked in manufacturing, and they lack the skills. No money in this provision at which to provide education or training at which to move these folks onto a path. So again, unfunded, a huge unfunded mandate that's going to result in increased hunger and food insecurity.
We are talking about changes to the food stamps program. They're set to take effect in April 2020. It could render as many as 45,000 Ohioans alone without the federal food aid benefit. That you just heard Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She's the executive director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. And Ellen Ballinger is with us. She's the legal director and director of advocacy for the food stamps program at the Food Research and Action Center. That's a national nonprofit dedicated to ending poverty-related hunger. And we're going to talk about those two other changes that are on the way as well when we return. If you have any questions or comments, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the changes to the food stamps program set to take effect in April 2020. The plan tightens work requirements for federal food aid, and it could render as many as 700,000 people ineligible for the program, including 45,000 Ohioans. Still with us is Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She's the executive director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Also, Ellen Ballinger. She's legal director and director of advocacy for the food stamps program at the Food Research and Action Center. That's a national nonprofit dedicated to ending poverty-related hunger. So, Lisa Hamler-Fugit, let's get to these other changes. One has to do with utilities, and another one has to do with the categories and who falls into what category. So let's start with utilities. What's going on there?
The standard utility allowance is a formula that states come up with that they use a very stringent methodology at which to determine high utility cost. And this factor is then used to calculate the actual SNAP or food stamp benefit. So in states like Ohio, where we have high energy costs, that this allows individuals that pay a disproportionate share of their income towards high utility cost, it's the ability to take that deduction in determining their benefits. Again, it's the law. It's not a loophole, as some have attempted to frame it. That comment period just ended on December 2nd. We generated nationwide over 88,000 comments. This is known as the Heat or Eat provision. It's going to affect 300,000 low-income households in Ohio.
What does it do? I mean, how does it affect them?
It's going to take, on average, about $42 a month out of their current modest benefit.
Which is basically a third of what they're getting now.
That's correct. That's correct. It means that they'll be seeking out a replacement for that. $42 for a low-income Ohioan who's on the SNAP program means many, many missed meals, more missing meals than they already have. And again, states have done a really good job. This has been part of the regulations and the law. We call this the heat or eat provision. The next rule is around categorical eligibility, meaning that this is a provision that's allowed states to streamline benefits. If a low-income family with children are receiving SNAP benefits, then their children can automatically be enrolled in free school lunch and school breakfast programs. So we fully expect that this rule is going to move forward, meaning that we're now going to take meals, free lunch and breakfast programs out of the mouths of hungry children.
And Ellen Vollinger, how many children are expected to be affected by that?
On the national level, the estimate from USDA itself is that it jeopardizes free school meals for 1 million school children. And that's because they are part of families, households, where 3.1 million individuals are going to lose SNAP. And these are typically low-income families that are working their way up the economic ladder, and SNAP allows them to have their individual circumstances looked at as they're moving their way up the economic ladder to see if they still are needy, if they have so many other expenses going out the door for food, for utilities, for shelter, for childcare, that money's not really readily available to pay for food, and they calibrate the amount of SNAP benefits accordingly. If and when they were to take that provision away from states, low-income workers working their way up the economic ladder would face what we call the cliff effect. The rug would be pulled out of them from under them abruptly. They would no longer get a little bit of assistance as they're working their way up, maybe getting a little bit extra hours, maybe getting a little more in a raise. But still, they're struggling. They're still generally low income and needing that help as they stabilize and work toward long-term success. So it's a very short-sighted policy. And as Lisa said, because it's a streamlining and a very smart way to do policy, it's going to have the very harmful effect of also taking food not just away from the kids while they're at home, but take away those preschool meals for so many of them.
I thought we were sort of entering a stage where lunch and breakfast at schools are becoming almost universal because it's such a widely accepted notion that kids need their food.
Yeah, and I want to applaud many of the school districts who have gone to community eligibility option, meaning that all children in those schools, because of the high percentage who are eligible for free meals, they do a universal free breakfast and lunch program for everyone. I mean, this is America. We're entering a new decade of 2020, and we're still heavily regulating things that we know have a direct correlating impact on a child's ability to learn. We're headed in the wrong direction on this public policy, and we need policymakers to stand up. Certainly with Governor DeWine and the First Lady, they've shown a real commitment to childhood hunger, and we need them weighing in with members of Congress to say this goes too far. Stop the attack on the poor, especially poor, vulnerable children and their families.
We talked about litigation a little earlier, Ellen. What would be the basis for a lawsuit on this?
Well, you know, the USDA is given a certain amount of ability to write rules and regulations, but it has to do that within the scope of what policy Congress has set. USDA is not supposed to be about setting policy itself or making policy itself. It's supposed to operate within the framework that Congress has given it. The most recent enunciation of that policy is the bipartisan farm bill that Lisa mentioned earlier. It was signed into law last December. It's the major piece of legislation Congress undertakes every few years, and they take a thorough look at all the programs in that farm bill, including SNAP. And there were decisions made about each and every one of these areas of SNAP that are now the discussion of the rulemaking, the one about whether or not to cut off people in areas with insufficient jobs, even if they're trying to work, if they can't document the sufficient hours. Cut people off as they're working their way up the economic ladder and not give states the ability to work with them in a more gradual way in terms of moving away from the program, take school meals away from children. Those were squarely at issue in the farm bill. And similarly, Congress made no choice to alter the standard utility deduction or to weaken it in any way. So those are three program areas that were thoroughly vetted when Congress undertook its review of the program. The Trump administration, for instance, had proposed the utility change in three of its successive president's budgets. Congress knew it was out there and decided not to go that route. So I think one of the things that probably people will be looking at and asking courts to look at is whether or not Congress has exceeded its authority to do what it's doing. In addition, there's certain deference given to agencies because of their expertise, but they cannot do rulemaking without some procedures being followed. That's why there were public comment periods. So as Lisa mentioned, over 100,000 people commented on the first rule, over 168,000 commented on the second rule, and we're actually jumping a little even higher as the count goes on utilities, and it's now, that one's also now over 100,000. USDA needs to take into account that public comment. It cannot act with unfettered discretion. It has to act appropriately. And I think you will see that in many of the comments, people commented about not only the policy being unwise, but about the steps that USDA had not really followed to fully explain what it was doing or to put all the facts before the American public. So one would hope that as someone reviews this, it's both on the substance, whether or not they've exceeded their scope of authority, but also did they follow the proper procedure? Because agencies do not have unfettered discretion. They cannot act arbitrarily.
When you're talking about bipartisan support for stopping these rule changes at the congressional level, is that in the Senate as well as the House?
Well, I don't know where our pathway will be in terms of what gets stopped. Mm-hmm. Lisa certainly alluded to the fact that there is a very strongly supported bill on the Democratic side of the House.
Yeah.
Congress took action, though, a year ago with the Farm Bill.
Right.
You know, whether or not they take additional action, it seems to us that they have already spoken in a bipartisan fashion about what they think the direction of SNAP ought to be. It was a very robust policy debate for over 2 years with a lot of proposals that were rejected. And on a bipartisan basis, that bill passed overwhelmingly. I think, actually, when they talk about the Senate vote, it's probably the strongest bipartisan vote for any farm bill in any kind of recent memory. So we're going to be looking at different areas and avenues that could possibly stop this rule. But Congress has already, I think, given a pretty strong signal on where policy ought to be, and whether or not USDA ignores that and whether or not they can get away with that is a good question, I think, because they may or may not be on firm ground to ignore what happened in the Farm Bill.
Lisa?
And I do want to say that USDA did overreach. There were provisions in this rule that came out that weren't even part of the public comment period, including the elimination of extended unemployment benefits as a criteria for receiving the waiver. And this is really important, especially in a time of economic downturn. I have had conversations with Senator Portman's staff. He's one that spoke out firmly and stood against these provisions in the Farm Bill. I know he is deeply concerned about the populations that may be affected that he's advocated for, those who are in treatment, victims of human trafficking, as well as veterans. There are going to be a whole lot of people that are going to be hurt by this, who I believe have very sympathetic support from members of Congress. And here again, it's really time for Congress to stand up and push back on the Trump administration and say, no, you've gone too far. We've spoken on this, and they need to intervene, whether it's through legislation or not.
Were there other agencies at the federal level that weighed in on this, like Health and Human Services, for instance, Lisa?
No. I mean, I have to tell you the one thing that we have seen with those within the administration is that government's been hollowed out for some time. Career folks have left their positions. There's very little knowledge, historical knowledge, about these programs and how they operate and who they serve. And here again, if we really wanted to get to the bottom of developing programs and providing more resources to help people move beyond through a continuum, we would be asking this kind of information. We would be collecting this data. And quite frankly, no one in the Trump administration seems to be too interested in knowing the facts.
Yeah. Is there anything in this rule, Ellen Vollinger, that requires the government to keep track of what the impact of this is?
No, I don't think that they're really committed to necessarily seeing the impact. And to a certain extent, they, I think, are signaling to the states that it'll be up to them to implement properly. They'll work with them. But it's not as if there's a robust plan to make sure that people succeed. The administration is putting these proposals out, and the numbers of the estimates for how many people will be impacted on each of these, they're not our estimates. They're the administration's own estimates. So, for instance, on the first rule, which the administration didn't seem apologetic about, it estimated when it put it out that it'd be roughly over 700,000. Now it's a little bit under 700,000 people that they expect to be impacted. What does that mean? They expect that the policy will be a failure for that many people, that they fit a certain description and they will not be able to comply. That's not a recipe for success. That's not a, gee, we think we have a pathway for them and we think, let's try this and see where we come out. This is we already assume about 700,000 people won't be able to make it, and so let's just move on.
I just want to say that we have a call. I don't have time to take it, but it says that the Mid-Ohio Food Bank has a Double Your Donation Day today. So it's Double Your Donation to the Mid-Ohio Food Bank today. Maybe this has inspired you. We'll put a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you're looking for a link to that. I have to say, Ellen Vollinger, goodbye for now. I hope to talk to you again as these other changes are implemented.
Thank you so much, and it's always good to be with Lisa.
Ellen Vollinger is Legal Director and Director of Advocacy for the Food Stamps Program at the Food Research and Action Center. And Lisa Hamler-Fugit, Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Thanks, as always.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you and yours, Ann.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.